ranking Palestinian official tells Press TV the recent U.S. move to block pro-resistance websites was aimed at hiding American and Israeli crimes in the region. An Iraqi resistance group says its war with the U.S. will have no limits from now on, at following U.S. air raids on Iraq and Syria. And Italy eases its coronavirus restrictions while some Asia-Pacific nations, Russia and South Africa, grappling with a new wave of COVID-19 cases. Greetings and a warm welcome to World News. Good to have you with us. A prominent Palestinian figure says that a recent U.S. move to pull the block on pro-resistance websites is aimed at hiding American-Israeli crimes perpetrated in the region. Khaled al-Bach, the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, says that the measure is doomed to fail as alternative media will keep exposing the truth about U.S. and Israeli actions, especially against the people of Palestine.
What do you make of Washington's move to seize a range of news website domains belonging to the resistance front media, including Press TV? Does this move perhaps indicate that the American administration is again standing with Israel at the expense of Palestinian rights by silencing one of the most vocal channels on the issue of Palestine?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Hajb al-mawaqi' al-alamiya.
Blocking the pro-resistance media websites used by Islamic Radio and Television Union is a typical American move that is aimed at hiding the truth from the Western world and silencing the channels that expose all Israeli crimes and those of the U.S. allies in the region. The American administration doesn't want to let its community watch or read what the U.S. forces are doing in the Persian Gulf states, Syria, and Palestine. America is practicing the policy of blinding the international community from seeing the American and Israeli crimes and violations in the Middle East.
Does blocking the resistance front media websites, including Press TV, prove the effectiveness of these channels in exposing the Israeli crimes against Palestinian civilians?
It is doubtless that alternative media outlets work on delivering the truth about what is happening in the world without any manipulation or hiding. This, of course, exposes Israeli crimes in Jerusalem al-Quds and the Gaza Strip. New media outlets also expose all the American plans in the region, and that's why they block the resistance media websites, so that humane and kind-hearted people around the world don't see the truth about the cruelty of this inhumane Israeli regime in Palestine, especially in the Gaza Strip. This is an expected move, and the American administration should be held accountable for such a move that blocks the truth about the Israeli aggression and violates the Palestinian rights.
The American move seems to come as a clear violation of the freedom of press. What do you make of the silence of the international media organizations and human rights groups?
I believe that those behind such a decision should be prosecuted and punished. By this move, America is trying to reflect a wrong image of the Islamic nations and Palestinians to Western societies. The administration that tries to block the truth about the cruelty of the Israeli regime and describe Palestinians as terrorists should be held accountable and get the right punishment for the delusional role of blocking the reality of things. There should be legal trails against this administration, while the resistance front media outlets should come over this obstacle and keep doing their role of exposing the truth by different means in order for our voices to reach the international community.
Joe Biden, when first came to the office, he wanted to double efforts to achieve peace in the Middle East. Yet this move replicates Trump's attitude toward the region. Do you believe the current American administration is different than the previous one?
The American Peace Project is based on disinformation, deception, and covering up the truth. It represented the Palestinian community as terrorists, while representing the Israeli regime as a humane presence in the region that only defends its people. Unfortunately, this American policy is not less dangerous than the decision by the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres to exclude Israel from a blacklist of countries and groups responsible for harming children during conflicts. It's not surprising that the Americans stick to the blind eye policy so they can hide all the crimes committed by Israel against Palestinians. The Americans' move gives a green light for Israel to commit more crimes and to purify unfair solutions for the Palestinian issue. It is aimed at destroying the Palestinian cause and hiding the reality from being delivered to the world so that America can realize its plan in the region without being held accountable and implement the Israeli plans in Palestine. This is a clear attempt to isolate the Western nations from the Middle East and spread ignorance in these countries about what is happening in Palestine, also about the details of the Iranian nuclear deal, as well as many other issues in the Middle East and the Islamic world.
An Iraqi resistance group has vowed to shoot down any American hostile airplane following U.S. air raids inside Iraq and Syria. A faction operating under Iraqi Popular Mobilization Unit says that the war with the U.S. will have no limits from now on. The group says its first step would be targeting hostile aircraft flying over Iraq. Iran has slammed the attacks, calling them a continuation of America's failed policy in the region. The U.S. Defense Department says its early Monday strikes hit operational and weapons storage facilities at a location in Iraq and two in Syria. It says the air raids were in response to attacks on U.S. interests in Iraq. According to the Pentagon, the strikes were directed by President Joe Biden. These are the second such attacks under the Biden administration, and they come amid growing calls in Iraq for the withdrawal of U.S.-led foreign forces from the country. Mohammed Ali says that a child has been killed in the U.S. air raids that have hit residential buildings near the Iraq-Syria border.
According to Syrian state media, at about 1 a.m. Local time here in Syria, fighter jets believed to be American attacked residential apartments near a town called Abu Kamal, which is on the borderline between Syria and Iraq. Now, the attack, according to Sana, the officially the state media over here, state news agency, the attack killed one child and injured three other civilians, as well as it caused material damage to those apartments, residential areas over there near Abu Kamal.
Author and activist Yves Engler says that the U.S. has no right to kill people in Syria under the pretext of self-defense.
The U.S. has no right to be killing and bombing people in Syria. And if it's going to do that, it certainly shouldn't be justifying that as defense. So, yes, obviously, if there was a child killed, which some reports are suggesting, that's obviously terrible. And it just adds to a long list of children, civilians, women who have been killed by the U.S. in Syria, in Iraq, and in so many different countries. I think that the U.S. has at times clearly supported ISIS and has, you know, enabled them to grow, and I don't think that the U.S.'s primary objective right now is definitely not about ISIS. It's about controlling the region, and it's, I think, a bit of a competition or geopolitical battle with Iran. It's about weakening Assad. It's about controlling, oil. And in Syria, American troops, about 1,000 U.S. troops are still just controlling, and this is explicit, they're not even hiding it, we're just keeping control of Syrian oil.
Tehran has denounced as shameful genocide the discovery of mass graves in Canada's former residential schools for Indigenous children. The foreign ministry spokesman says that the Canadian government has to accept responsibility for the crime and be held accountable. Said Khatibzadeh says that Canada has always pretended to be a defender of human rights, but it's now trying to divert attention from its dark history of human rights with false claims. He said that Iran and several other countries demand a UN-monitored probe into the issue, as the Canadian government lacks the qualification to conduct such an investigation. Now, that reaction came after discovery of multiple mass graves at sites of two church-run schools in Canada recently. The graves contained remains of nearly 1,000 Indigenous students. Protest rallies raging in the Akbad West Bank over the death of Nizar Banat, an outspoken critic of the Palestinian Authority who died in the custody of the PA forces on Thursday. Manai Kandil has the story.
Demonstrations against Palestinian Authority over the death of Nizar Banat, an activist and outspoken critic of the PA, keep going on across the occupied West Bank. In the city of Ramallah, these protests turned violent as the protesters who began to march to presidential compound faced a group of PA president's security officers in plain clothes. The forces blocked the rally, chased and attacked the protesters who were chanting slogans against the PA and its president. Palestinian security forces in riot gear fired tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the protesters. Palestinian factions condemned the use of force against the protesters, saying people have the right to peacefully protest.
The people see that the investigation is slow and that the Palestinian Authority has not yet condemned the killing of Nizar Banat. So people are taking to the streets to ensure those behind Banat's death are put on trial.
Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Ishtayi said an investigation was launched to investigate Banat's death. Palestinians are demanding a swift, independent, and a transparent investigation. Palestinian rights group made an initial autopsy, saying that Banat took blows to the head, and the wounds indicated an unnatural death.
We need to take some practical steps within law that require justice, investigation, and accountability for those behind Nizar Banat's death. We say there is a need to dismiss this government as well as the heads of the security forces.
Journalists were also attacked by security forces during the protests. The Palestinian Journalists Union decried the grave development in the attack on freedom of expression and the media. Journalists, meanwhile, say condemnation is not enough. They say the attack is unacceptable and should be investigated in order to hold those responsible accountable.
Commentators say that what's going on today is only the tip of the iceberg. They say if the Palestinian Authority wants to prevent a possible collapse, it should bring those perpetrators into justice and allow people to freely protest and express their opinion. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The Yemeni army says it's launched a major missile and drone attack against sensitive military targets in Saudi Arabia's southern region. Army spokesman General Sarisa, the country's missile force and air force, performed a joint operation using 5 ballistic missiles and as many drones. The strikes reportedly hit a National Guard compound in the city of Najran, military positions in Abha International Airport, and King Khalid Air Base in the city of Khamis Mashhad. Sari added that the missiles and drones hit the designated targets with precision. The Yemeni army carries out such retaliatory raids against Saudi Arabia in response to its deadly war. Moving on, the United Nations Human Rights Chief has called for dismantling discrimination against people of African descent. She says systematic racism requires a systematic response.
We need a transformative approach that tackles the interconnected areas that drive racism and lead to repeated, wholly avoidable tragedies like the death of George Floyd. I'm calling on all states to stop denying and start dismantling racism, to end impunity and build trust, to listen to the voices of people of African descent, and to confront past legacies and deliver redress.
Michelle Bachelet made a comment in a video address to the UN Human Rights Council. She said law enforcement officials should be prosecuted for unlawful killings. The UN official warned that the police use of racial profiling and excessive force has been entrenched in much of North America, Europe, and Latin America. Bachelet underlined the impacts of systematic racism on minorities' access to justice, employment, housing, and education. She called on the international community to show stronger political will in adopting racial justice and reforming the criminal justice systems. Major witness in the U.S. case against Julian Assange says that he has lied in his testimony against the WikiLeaks founder. Sigurdur Ingi Thordarson told Icelandic media that he fabricated key accusations in the indictment against Assange. He said the Icelandic journalist has never instructed him to carry out any hacking. Thordarson had earlier claimed that Assange should ask him to hack the computers of the Icelandic lawmakers. Media says that these statements played a pivotal role in portraying Assange as a criminal. The WikiLeaks founder is wanted in the U.S. for espionage after leaking classified documents on his whistleblower website. He is currently in a prison in the U.K. If extradited to the U.S., he could face up to 175 years behind bars. The spread of the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus has prompted renewed restrictions in different parts of the world. Majority of Australian cities have undergone under new lockdowns amid detection of new cases linked to the Delta variant. Several countries in South Asia, including Thailand, Indonesia, and Bangladesh, have tightened curbs. South Africa began a two-week lockdown Sunday. Russia has also imposed fresh restrictions in the capital, Moscow. Meantime, in Italy, all regions are now allowed to ease health measures. Once regarded as the epicenter of the pandemic, the European country marked a milestone by removing the obligation for wearing masks on Monday. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's first impeachment for abusing his power in approaches to Ukraine attracted one Republican vote, that of the Utah Senator Mitt Romney. In his second, for inciting the deadly U.S. Capitol attack, 10 House Republicans and 7 in the Senate voted for Trump's guilt. We now present you an article written by Martin Pengelly. Under the heading, Donald Trump returns to campaign trail with rally targeting Ohio Republicans. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Former U.S. President Donald Trump returned to the campaign trail with a rally in Ohio on Saturday night, 26th of June, campaigning against the Republican who voted for his impeachment and trailing his own candidacy for president in 2024. Trump repeated his baseless election 2020 grievances and painted a dystopian picture of the country under Democratic control, while in another echo of the past, the crowd chanted "Lock her up" at the mention of Hillary Clinton, the Democrat he defeated back in 2016. The rally outside Cleveland, Ohio on Saturday, 26th of June, was to support Max Miller, a former White House aide challenging Anthony Gonzalez, a former college football and NFL star censured by his state party for voting for Donald Trump's impeachment. While he praised Miller as an incredible patriot and a so-called great guy who purportedly loves the people of Ohio, Trump spent much of the rally fixating on the 2020 presidential election, which he insists he won. This is despite top state and local election officials, his own attorney general, and numerous judges, including some that he had appointed himself, saying there is no evidence of the mass voter fraud that Trump alleges took place. He told the crowd, which at one point broke into a "Trump won" chant, the 2020 presidential election was rigged. He added, "We won that election in a landslide." When Marjorie Taylor Greene, a far-right Republican from Georgia known for her incendiary rhetoric, asked the crowd who their president is, they boomed loudly, "Trump." She said, "President Trump is my president too." The event had many of the trappings of the rallies Donald Trump held as a candidate and as president. There was the eclectic playlist, the same stage design, and many familiar volunteers. In the lead-up to the event, Donald Trump told a conservative Newsmax channel, "We're giving tremendous endorsements. Fake Republicans, anybody that voted for the impeachment doesn't get it, but there weren't too many of them, and I think most of them are being primaried right now, so that's good. I'll be helping their opponent." Donald Trump's first impeachment for abusing his power in a protest to Ukraine attracted one Republican vote, that of Utah Senator Mitt Romney. In his second impeachment for inciting the deadly U.S. Capitol attack, 10 House Republicans and 7 in the Senate voted for Trump's guilt. Donald Trump was acquitted twice, but banned from major social media platforms over his role in the Capitol attack. Regardless, he dominates the Republican Party. All bar one of the House Republicans who voted against him have attracted challengers. The 10th, John Katko of New York, co-authored a proposal for an independent 9/11-style commission to investigate the 6th of January attack on Congress, in which a mob roamed the Capitol looking for lawmakers to capture or kill in an attempt to overturn the election result. Senate Republicans blocked it. By Saturday afternoon, traffic was backed up from the fairgrounds into town, where pro-Trump signs dotted residents' lawns. On street corners, vendors sold Trump 2024 flags and other merchandise as supporters arrived. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a far-right congresswoman from Georgia who was stripped of her committee assignments over a number of extreme comments, mingled with attendees and took pictures. Donald Trump has said he didn't win the election, but has not formally conceded defeat by Joe Biden, and continues to voice his lie that the loss was the result of electoral fraud. On Friday, he told Newsmax he would be making an announcement in the not-too-distant future about whether he will run again, and said supporters were going to be thrilled by election results in 2024. He said, "We want a little time to go by Maybe watch what happens in 2022. In 2022 midterm elections, Republicans hope to retake the House and the Senate. Donald Trump's legal problems mounted on Friday, 25th of June, as his own lawyer confirmed that charges are likely in the investigation of the Trump Organization by the Manhattan District Attorney. The company's chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, and the company itself are in prosecutors' sights. Some observers point out that Donald Trump's many legal problems did not stop him winning the presidency back in 2016 and are unlikely to put off many Republican voters should he run again for the White House. In his Newsmax interview, the former president referred to his problems and to those affecting Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's lawyer and loyal ally. The former New York mayor this week saw his law license suspended over his advancement of Donald Trump's election fraud lie. Trump said, "Right now, I'm helping a lot of people get into office, and we're fighting the deep state, and we're fighting the radical left. They're after me. They're after Rudy. They're after you, probably. They're after anybody." The deep state conspiracy theory holds that a permanent government of bureaucrats and operatives exists to thwart Donald Trump. Steve Bannon, Trump's campaign chairman in 2016, then a White House strategist and chief propagator of the theory, has said it is for nutcases. Donald Trump went on, "They're vicious, and they don't do a good job, and they're very bad for the country, but I've been fighting them for 5.5 years. He said, "Since I came down the escalator at Trump Tower in New York in June of 2015, to announce his run for president, I've been fighting them. These are vicious people. I honestly believe they don't love this country." Donald Trump has spent much of his post-presidency at his Florida resort and his golf course in New Jersey. He also told Newsmax he was working very hard, not only for 2024, but we're working very hard to show the corruption of what took place in 2020. And then we see what happens. Donald Trump's rallies have been an instrumental part of his brand since he launched his 2016 presidential campaign. The former president often test drives new material and talking points to see how they resonate with crowds. His political operation uses the events to collect critical voter contact information and as fundraising tools.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance, where we take inspiration from the sermons of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha, the Sermon of Qasi'ah, which actually talks about some very important socio-political issues like avoiding pride and staying away from the devil and the shaitan. But of course also it talks about some important things that the Islamic Ummah needs to take into consideration in their own relationships and a relationship with other societies and their relationship with God. One of the things that we mentioned is very important for an Islamic Ummah or an Islamic nation or people that live in an Islamic government is to have time to contemplate, to find time to contemplate on the reasons why previous generations progressed and the reasons why they became destroyed or they became degraded and why they stooped low. These are things that we need to contemplate and take lesson from. We need to see those factors that led them to grow and those factors that led them to diminish. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this sermon goes on to say, وَاجْتَنِبُوا كُلَّ أَمْرٍ كَسَرَ فِقْرَتَهُمْ. Inshallah, we will explain this phrase in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَاجْتَنِبُوا كُلَّ أَمْرٍ كَسَرَ فِقْرَتَهُمْ. That stay away, O people, O Muslim Ummah, stay away from all those things, all those actions, all those deeds that broke their backs, that broke and destroyed their backbone. What was that? Sometimes one nation, one group of people, one population in history was, you know, enjoying the best of states, had a lot of fame, had glory and power, but suddenly it got destroyed and dismantled and it completely became degenerated. It got wiped out of the face of the earth. And its backbone was destroyed, its back was broken. Look and see what led it to get destroyed like that. What did break its back? What led it to be defeated and destroyed? You even stay away from it, O Muslim Ummah. Take care, see, ponder, take time to think about these previous nations. Read history of what happened before you and do not allow the backbone of the Muslim Ummah to be destroyed. Look at the Muslim world today with all the different things that are happening. How the Muslim world, many of the Muslim countries have been degraded. How much they unfortunately are, you know, not having that honor to be able to fight for their rights and for their freedoms. وَاجْتَنِبُوا كُلَّ أَمْرٍ كَسَرَ فِقْرَتَهُمْ وَأَوْهَنَا مُنَّتَهُمْ. And stay away from all those things that broke their backs and, you know, and brought down their energy and strength. and decreased their energy and strength? What were those things that broke their backs, that reduced their strength and, you know, annihilated their strengths? What was it? Min tadaghunil qulub. One of them was the hate that existed between their hearts. They build up hatred for one another, one after the other. They build it up. They strengthened that hate. They did things that will cause other people to hate them. They purposely poked and disturbed and, you know, found faults in other people and purposely, for instance, desecrated the sanctities of other people that belong to the Muslim nation. And this led to what? This led to a certain form of hatred to exist between them.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that one of those reasons why the backbone of communities got broken was these hatreds, this hatred, min tadaghun al-qulub, when people bore hatred within themselves, when the people of community, they, you know, did things that brought that hatred inside each other's hearts. Watashahun al-sudur, and when, you know, what you call the grudges began to fill their chests, grudge for one another. No, someone did a mistake. Okay, sometimes some people do things that are actually hateful, purposely. But sometimes a community might do things inadvertently. People inside this community, let's say, does something by mistake, inadvertently, without intending. But the other person continues to bear grudge. And this is one of the reasons why communities get destroyed. وَتَدَابُرِ النُّفُوسِ. And one of the other reasons is that when the people inside a community turn away from one another, تَدَابُرِ النُّفُوسِ, they turn away, they show their backs to one another. That means they don't have a united front. They don't look at each other eye to eye. They don't face one another. This is one of the reasons why the backbones of communities were broken. Why, for example, the community's energy and strength and power was reduced and to crumbles. And how that is why the communities got destroyed. So inshallah, let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He helps us. That we as the Muslim Ummah should not do things that cause hatred within us as the people, or within us as belonging to a specific sect, and to help us not to bear grudge amongst each other and work for that cause of unity and strength. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
An indictment of the Trump Organization could mark the first criminal charges to emerge from an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney into Donald J. Trump and his business dealings. The Manhattan District Attorney's office has informed Donald J. Trump's lawyers that it is considering criminal charges against his family business, the Trump Organization, in connection with fringe benefits the company awarded a top executive, according to several people with knowledge of the matter. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist William K. Rashbaum, Ben Protas, and Jonah E. Bromwich. The piece is titled, Trump Organization Could Face Criminal Charges in District Attorney Inquiry. An indictment of the Trump Organization could mark the first criminal charges to emerge from an investigation by Manhattan District Attorney into Donald J. Trump and his business dealings. The Manhattan District Attorney's office has informed Donald J. Trump's lawyers that it is considering criminal charges against his family business, the Trump Organization, in connection with fringe benefits the company awarded a top executive, according to several people with knowledge of the matter. The prosecutors had been building a case for months against the executive, Alan H. Weisselberg, as part of an effort to pressure him to cooperate with a broader inquiry into Donald Trump's business dealings. But it was not previously known that the Trump Organization also might face charges. If the case moves ahead, the district attorney, Cyrus R. Vance Jr., could announce charges as soon as next week, the people said. Mr. Vance's prosecutors have been conducting the investigation along with lawyers from the office of the New York State Attorney General Letitia James. Any indictment would be the first to emerge from the long-running investigation and would raise the startling prospect of a former president having to defend the company he founded and has run for decades against accusations of criminal behavior. Prosecutors recently have focused much of their investigation into the perks that Donald Trump and the company doled out to Mr. Weisselberg and other executives, including tens of thousands of dollars in private school tuition for one of Mr. Weisselberg's grandchildren, as well as rents on apartments and car leases. They are looking into whether those benefits were properly recorded in the company's ledgers and whether taxes were paid on them, the New York Times has reported. Donald Trump's lawyers met on Thursday, 24th of June, with senior prosecutors in the district attorney's office in hope of persuading them to abandon any plan to charge the company, according to several people familiar with the meeting. Such meetings are routine in white-collar criminal investigations, and it is unclear whether the prosecutors have made a final decision on whether to charge the Trump Organization, which has long denied any wrongdoing. In my more than 50 years of practice, never before have I seen a district attorney's office target a company over employee compensation or fringe benefits, said Ronald P. Fischetti, a personal lawyer for Donald Trump. It's ridiculous and outrageous. Several lawyers who specialize in tax rules have told the New York Times that it would be highly unusual to indict a company just for failing to pay taxes on fringe benefits. None of them could cite any recent example, noting that many companies provide their employees with benefits like company cars. still, an indictment of Donald Trump's company could deal a blow to the former president, just as he has started to hold rallies and flirt with a return to politics. The Trump Organization is inseparable from Mr. Trump, acting as a corporate umbrella for a portfolio of hotels, golf clubs, and other real estate, most of which are branded with his name. It is unclear whether Donald Trump will ultimately face charges himself. The investigation, which began 3 years ago, has been wide-ranging, examining whether the Trump Organization manipulated the value of its properties to obtain favorable loans and tax benefits, people with knowledge of the matter have said. The inquiry is also examining the organization's statements to insurance companies about the value of various assets and any role that its employees, including Mr. Weisselberg, may have played in hush money payments to two women during the 2016 presidential campaign. Donald J. Trump has derided the investigation by Mr. Cyrus Vance Jr., a Democrat, as politically motivated witch hunt. He unsuccessfully tried to fight a subpoena from Mr. Vance's office seeking 8 years of his personal and corporate tax returns, a fight that twice reached the United States Supreme Court. A spokesman for the district attorney's office declined to comment on Friday. A lawyer for Mr. Weisselberg, Mary Mulligan, also declined to comment. A spokeswoman for the Trump Organization did not respond to a request for comment. The meeting on Thursday, 24th of June, between Mr. Trump's lawyers and the prosecutors, held on a video call and lasting more than an hour and a half, was arranged by Mr. Fischetti, the people familiar with the meeting said. Fischetti is a former law partner of Mark Pomerantz, a former federal prosecutor and defense lawyer whom the district attorney's office enlisted to help lead the inquiry into Donald Trump and his business. At least one representative of the New York Attorney General's office also attended the meeting, one of the people said. Letitia James's office has been conducting a civil inquiry into some of the same issues that the district attorney's office is examining, but joined Mr. Cyrus Vance's criminal investigation in recent weeks. In the coming days, Donald Trump's lawyers plan to continue to try to persuade prosecutors not to charge the company, according to a person briefed on the matter. Companies, even private ones, like the Trump Organization, are subject to criminal prosecution and can face fines and other penalties if they're found guilty. Charges also can threaten an organization's relationships with banks and business partners and cause lasting reputational damage. The indictments could increase pressure to cooperate on Mr. Weisselberg, who could seek to cut a deal with prosecutors to testify against Donald Trump in exchange for leniency. Mr. Weisselberg's intimate knowledge of the Trump Organization, he has worked at the company for decades and was one of the top executives when Donald Trump was in the White House, would make his corporation an enormous asset to investigators looking at all aspects of the company. Because of that, he has been a central focus of scrutiny in the district attorney's investigation, with particular attention paid to the benefits that he and his family have received. In general, those types of benefits are taxable, although there are some exceptions and the rules can be murky. Donald Trump depends heavily on Mr. Weisselberg, who has continued to work at the Trump Organization while under investigation. In his book, Think Like a Billionaire, Donald Trump credited Mr. Weisselberg for doing whatever was necessary to protect the bottom line. And few things grate at Donald Trump like the prospect of disloyalty. Close allies have turned on him in the past, including his former personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, whom Donald Trump has labeled a rat. Mr. Cohen, who pleaded guilty to federal charges related to hush money payments to two women, is cooperating with the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation. After pleading guilty, Mr. Cohen said that it was Mr. Weisselberg who had helped the Trump Organization to disguise the reimbursements that Mr. Cohen received for paying off one of the women. Mr. Weisselberg was not accused of any wrongdoing by federal prosecutors, and Donald Trump did not pardon him in his final days in office, though he was said to have considered doing so. A pardon would not have given Mr. Weisselberg immunity from state charges. After Mr. Cohen pleaded guilty in 2018, Donald Trump expressed confidence that Mr. Weisselberg had not turned on him. 100% he didn't, Donald Trump told reporters for Bloomberg News Agency. He added, "He's a wonderful guy."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. We have certain ideas or concepts in our mind of what force is, who has real power. Is real power, you know, with those who have large armies, or as they say, you know, might is right? Or is true force, true power in another place? In this tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, we see that no, it is not the force of an army, it is not the dictatorship, again I use this word very loosely to indicate power, of the governor, of the king, of the sultan over his people. This is not real power. This is, as the philosophers will say, imaginary power. You feel that you have power, but in fact you don't. You are just using fear tactics. There's no power. The Imam alayhi salam indicates there is a greater power, there is a greater force. And that force is with that person who has the ability to debate, to argue, and to bring about proofs in an intellectual manner. That he can prove his beliefs. He can prove, for example, you know, the defects in the argument of others, not because, you know, he has physical force, but because he has intellectual force. That he has the ability to show that this statement, because of this result, cannot be true. He has the logic behind it. He has the so-called structure behind arguments, and he's firm in it. And the principles that he uses are firm. So the tradition that the Imam alayhi salam is reported to have said is that the force of the authority of the argument, that is that argument that you have, or that argument that a person presents to you in a particular manner that is firm, that force that it has the ability to change everything, right, is greater than the force of the authority of power. Now, power here could mean, for example, the sultan, the king, and so on and so forth. Why? Because this is using rationale. It is taking people out from darkness into light. Whereas the other one is, at times, fear. At times, it is imaginary. At times, it is just something that truly doesn't exist. However, that force of argument that takes a person to reality, takes a person to the truth, is far greater. And it has far greater pulling power. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to see truth and to see the truth in arguments, inshaAllah, to follow the truth when we see the truth in arguments as well. InshaAllah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The United States says that If a 7-year authorization from the United Nations expires, which allows trucks to go from Turkey to Syria,